So, yeah, ADS4, CFT3. So the idea is to sort of try and give some sort of overview of sort of the results that have sort of happened in the last 6-8 months. And this, of course, necessitates going, there's been a large amount of results very quickly in this time, and so it necessitates going very quickly. And so certain things will get skipped, and certain things will get covered without the details. Also, I'm going to try and do it on the blackboard, and this obviously means trying to avoid so many long equations. But if there's questions, obviously, please just ask. Okay, so with apologies over, I'll try and start. So the idea is to try and consider greedy, super informal Chern-Simons with symmetry group OSP n greater or equal to 4 for real. Okay, so this is actually, to put it in a slightly larger context maybe than is usual. So this is sort of the set of theories considered by like Gaiotto and Witten and HLLLP before. So here we have the matter content is hyper multiplets, so obviously you have Chern-Simons, and twisted hyper multiplets. So we have phi A, psi A dot, phi tilde A dot, psi tilde A, where these are sort of SU2 left and SU2 right R charge indices. And you can classify, this was originally by Gaiotto and Witten, you can classify these superconformal matter Chern-Simons theories with this extended supersymmetry by sort of mapping each one to a Lie superalgebra. So the idea is that you have a gauge group plus matter, where this corresponds to the even part of your Lie superalgebra. So the even part is the gauge group, and the matter corresponds to the fermionic part. So you have some sort of superalgebra. So we have some generators, some even generators, Mn. This is FmnP, Np. And, of course, you have the action of the even generators on the fermionic generators, Qa. And this is QB, trying to write indices right, TMBA. So the even part, as I said, specifies the gauge group, and the fermionic part is specifies the matter content, where the structure constants that arise here sort of give rise to the superpotential, or determine what the superpotential is. And if this algebra, of course, with the odd-odd part, if it's a Lie superalgebra, these structure constants satisfy Jacobi identity, and this is the condition for having extended supersymmetry. Yeah, so, I mean, basically, the key thing, so, I mean, these Qs are not the matter. Basically, what it is that these Ts that enter into this superalgebra, these Ts specify the action, sorry, specified the superpotential in the matter Chern-Simons theory. So there's a, so here's the matter content in my Chern-Simons theory, and the superpotential has some T, A, B, C, D, phi A, phi B, phi C, phi D, where this T, A, B is related, is a sort of product of these things. And the condition that there's an extended supersymmetry gives you a condition on these constants. And basically, it's just that these T's satisfy the Jacobi identity that would follow from the superalgebra. This is R-charge symmetries. So they're just global symmetries. Okay, so basically, yeah, there's one, so we can sort of classify these theories by mapping them to Lie superalgebras. And so we'd have some sort of, basically, we can sort of write our Lie superalgebra, say the simplest case, like such. So we have some gauge group G1, G2, so these are sort of the two even pieces of the Lie superalgebra. The matter fields, as I said, sort of correspond to the odd part, and the action of the even part on the even part on the fields is given by the relation here. And so this sort of this Lie superalgebra would correspond to the following quiver, G2, where we have some phi, which is a bifundamental field under these two G's, under these two gauge groups. But if we have twisted matter, we can have more complicated sort of Lie superalgebras where these transform under the same gauge groups, but in principle they can transform in different representations. So you can have some more extended G1, G2, G3, and so on, where now we have phi, phi, phi tilde, and so on. And so this would correspond to some more complicated quiver theory, G1, G2, this is phi, phi tilde, G3, and so on. Okay. Yes. Mm-hmm. No, this is the matter. So it's Chern-Simons. So there's a gauge field that I have not written about anywhere. So there's Chern-Simons gauge field, and then there's matter, which is in hypermultiplets and twisted hypermultiplets, which are these are bifundamental matter under the gauge field. Right, so the superalgebra, so these are the structure constants for the gauge field. No, so that's what I'm saying. So these things here, these are the even parts of the superalgebra, so these are just bosonic, right? And then I can also, if I can extend, so I have a gauge group, which corresponds to this Chern-Simons theory. If I can extend this gauge group to a Lie superalgebra, where the even part is given by the gauge group, and the fermionic part is given, sort of corresponds to the matter, such that the matter transforms under the even part given by these structure constants, where these structure constants are the constants that enter into the superpotential, then I get an extended n equals 4 supersymmetric Chern-Simons theory. Yeah, this Lie superalgebra is sort of a classification tool. It's not. The Lie superalgebra really is just a classification tool. The key things, the parts of the superalgebra that actually enter into the Chern-Simons theory are the structure constants. Okay. So, given that, let me see. Yes. So, if we want to, given this classification here, like this, this would give me n equals, sort of generically gives me n equals to 4 supersymmetry in three dimensions. If I want to go to higher supersymmetry, if I want to go to n equals to 5 or n equals to 6 or indeed to n equals 8, that I don't know. Yeah, So it is a complete classification with a whole bunch of caveats about U1s and things like this, which I'm not willing to say. So this is a large, what do you call, family. I don't know. I mean, there certainly are specific examples which are not accounted here, but they're special cases. You can put in anything, indeed, yeah. I mean, and so, for example, if, say, we want to go to n equals to 5, or greater than 5, so if we have greater than 5, we have to have the additional condition is basically that the twisted and the untwisted, the untwisted and the twisted matter have to transform in the same representations. So in this case, so they're, again, by fundamental matter, but now they have to transform in the same representations, so we get sort of a quiver, such like this, where, say, the double line is the twisted matter and the single line is the untwisted. And now, actually, the set of gauge groups that are consistent with this condition is quite slightly smaller. So it's OSP the sort of one large family, OSP N to M. And then there's actually some exceptional cases like G3, F4, D2, 1, alpha, like this. I'm not even certain. These are exceptional superalgebras, but this is the, you know, the family where you have many cases. If you want to have N equals to 6, not only, so then in that case, so this is where the twisted and the untwisted are in the same representation. If the representation decomposes into conjugate, if the representation decomposes into conjugate representations, then we get N equals 6. And the list of superalgebras for which this is possible is smaller. It's SLNM and OSP2M. And then if the conjugate representations are isomorphic, we get N equals H. And in that case, there's just one, PSU2/2. So this is the Bagger-Lambert-Gustafson N equals H Chern-Simons theory. The case when N is equal to M gives us the ABJM theory. When N is not equal to M, we get the ABJ theory. And then there's some additional case, which I haven't seen anyone actually bother to consider in any detail. So this is sort of the list. And so really what I want to do is I want to just to focus on the case of N. Although actually a weak coupling to two loops, the N equals M case actually seems to be the same, but the but it's a different theory where you sort of have discrete torsion in the dual. And the integrability of that theory is not clear at all. This obviously is just the one special case and presumably has much as the same behavior, but of course doesn't have a large N limit. What else do I want to say? Ah, yes. So one thing that's sort of nice is that all of these theories, of course, or all of these are superconformal. You can take any of these theories and mass deform it, so sort of break the conformal invariance by adding matter terms, mass terms for the matter fields, not for the Chern-Simons fields. And you actually, so in that sense, all of these massive Chern-Simons theories are classified by the same set of the superalgebras. And the mass deformation is sort of, is nice in that you can then go ahead and calculate an S matrix. You can do target space scattering. Sort of, but in this case, you actually have sort of a well-defined S matrix where you preserve the supersymmetry, given that dimensional regularization is not so maybe, well, it's trickier in three dimensions with Chern-Simons. Yes? Yeah.
I
don't know the proof of, so it's a little tricky for me to say. But my understanding is that the exceptions to this classification correspond to adding in things like extra U1 fields or extra U1. So there's no N family that you could put here that would have N equals to 8. Yeah, I'm not sure of the actual list of qualifications, the classification, but it's sufficient that there's no N, there's no like a one family parameter or one parameter family of theories. Yeah. No. Indeed. The same wasn't. It's just that I don't know what they are. I agree. Especially, all of these things, they're conformal. They have the right kind of matter content. It seems very likely that there's some dual theory. I mean, for some of them, we do know, as I said, in particular, for the ABJ
theory. We do know where you add discrete torsion. Some of the other ones may be known, but I don't know what they are. Yeah. But indeed, there's mapping. Right. So that was just to say that, and now I really do want to just sort of focus on the n equals 6 UN gate. So this is, what am I doing? UN case, yeah, where the gauge group is just UN times UN. This is sort of the ABGM theory. So it has SU4 R symmetry in the matter content, the scalar content now is just a 4 in the NN bar of the gauge group. So this is the 4 of SU4. There's conjugate fields in the conjugate representations, 4 bar of SU4. So the 4 is the representation under the R symmetry. And they're bifundamental gauge fields, so the A runs from 1 to 4, so this is the R symmetry index. This is the representation of the gauge group. As I said, they're bifundamental, so it's 2 UN, so it transforms in the N, and the other one, the N bar, and this is in the conjugate. Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. So then, following sort of yes, Minahan and Durambo, and independently, we can ask at leading order, so at leading at Hooft coupling, where lambda is n over k, where k is the level of the Chern-Simons theory, and n is the rank of the gauge group. At leading order in lambda, and at one in the planar limit. What are the anomalous? Is the sort of the anomalous dimension mixing matrix an integrable Hamiltonian? Well, the first thing to do is, of course, to indeed calculate what the mixing matrix is. So, in the scalar sector, so this is sort of including all possible scalars, but no other excitations. So we have operators that look like trace of YA1, YA1 dagger, oh, B1, I guess, sorry. B1, A2, YB2 dagger, so on. We want to look at the mixing matrix of this, and the usual thing is sort of we can identify this with a spin chain. But in this case, now it's an alternating spin chain. So this is obviously in the 4, 4 bar, 4, 4 bar. So sort of the individual spins alternate as you go around the spin chain, and so on. And the mixing matrix, so the anomalous dimension, gets mapped to the Hamiltonian, which acts on the wedge B bar L. So it's for a length L spin chain. And we want to identify the mixing matrix with a spin chain Hamiltonian. And this can be calculated in perturbation theory, just at leading order. And so we get lambda squared. The first one is at 2 loops. There's no anomalous dimensions at 1 loop because we're in 3 dimensions. 2L, 2 minus permutation plus PL plus 2, KL, L plus 1 plus KL. L plus 1, P, L plus 2, where, as I said, P basically is sort of the permutes, permutes are what we call flavor index, and K is just the contraction of flavor indices. Please. Yeah, so here, so this is sort of the Lie superalgebra classification. So the gauge content is UN times, so the gauge fields are UN times UN. No, so the Qs. So the Qs basically correspond
So the y's correspond to the q's in that they transform. Yes, and they transform as a 4 and a 4 bar under the SE 4. No. But if I write down the superpotential, which I didn't hear, which gives rise to this theory, again, it would have this form where the T's would be given by the UN, the appropriate UN. These Q's are not symmetries of the theory. Yep. Yeah. Okay, so this was to pull this theory out of this classification. I guess that was a really big mistake. Okay. Yeah, so and that's what this was to try and say, that these y's transformed by fundamental. Yeah, okay. Okay. So this is the two-loop dilatation operator, which is the Hamiltonian for the spin chain, and then there's the question of whether that is integrable. And indeed, there's sort of the study of alternating spin chains is reasonably well known. And Hamiltonian wasn't apparently in the literature. It follows from sort of apparently again a reasonably standard construction. So we have an OR matrix. Actually, we need a couple of OR matrices. So we have an OR matrix, labeled by RAB, U. This is the spectral parameter, U minus PAB. But I also have to introduce, so here, this sort of labels the a spin site. But both of these are sort of in the fundamental representation. So I also have R matrices, which have one leg in sort of acting on an anti-fundamental. It's U plus K. A B bar, and finally A B bar. So two legs acting, and this is just two legs acting on anti-fundamental, and this is just P again. It's just U minus the permutation. These R matrices satisfy Yang-Baxter equations or modified Yang-Baxter equations, which I won't write down. But given these, we can then construct a monodromy matrix. Or indeed, actually, two monodromy matrices. And take their trace. So I'm going to take their trace as well. So you trace over the auxiliary vector space, and this is just given by. So I'll write this down. Trace A of T of A, where the trace is, so this T of A is just given by a product of these R matrices, or A1, U, or A1 bar, U minus 2, and so then you just sort of continue on, and then we have or AL bar, U minus 2, and so on, and there's a sort of conjugate or another monodromy matrix, where here I just replace the fundamental with an anti-fundamental, and I've done the shift wrong. You get sort of the same thing. So given this, I calculate the traces of these two monodromy matrices, and now to show that the system is integrable, I would need to show that this commutes with itself, this commutes with itself, and that these two things commute with themselves. And indeed, that's true. So T tau with tau is equal to tau bar is equal to tau with tau bar. They're all zero. In that these R matrices satisfy Yang-Baxter equations and modified Yang-Baxter equations, it's true that these, yeah,
I mean, like, this follows from that statement. Yeah. Right. And so the tau gives rise to sort of the even, so the Hamiltonian acting on sort of even latticites, tau minus 1 du tau equal to 0, and the odd, the Hamiltonian acting on the odd sites corresponds to the conjugate part. And the fact that sort of the sum of these two things is integrable sort of corresponds to the fact that the thing commutes with its conjugate. Right, so that's, so given this, then there's sort of a standard, you can sort of do algebraic beta ansatz and come up with beta equations which diagonalize these monodromy matrices or the traces of these monodromy matrices to, and I'm looking for an eraser. Ah, yep. Yeah, okay. So we can diagonalize tau and tau bar. We'll diagonalize them at the same time, indeed, using, again, the algebraic beta ansatz. And the beta equations, the corresponding beta equations, can sort of be described by the Dinkin diagram, where these, the two end nodes are the correspond to the momentum carrying roots. The middle root is an auxiliary, Vj. And I guess I don't really want to start writing down beta equations. This is the thing, I'm going to try and give a talk about the integrability without writing down beta equations. They're just very long. And in some sense, their form is given by these Dinkin diagrams. Of course, to actually write them down just takes a little bit of going through the literature, but if you haven't seen it, it's not so transparent. But I do want to just make a couple of points in that what the actual excitations correspond to, because this sort of is at least one of the things that's still a little bit confusing, I think. If we consider our vacuum to be sort of L copies of Y1, no, sorry, or dagger L. And then we want to look at sort of the scalar fluctuations about this vacuum. We can sort of classify them by exciting various roots or by exciting various nodes, adding roots corresponding to those nodes. So we have, say, a Y1 going to a Y2 or a Y3. This corresponds to exciting sort of the column. So it corresponds to exciting the first node. This one corresponds to exciting the first plus the second one. If we have Y4 dagger going to Y2 dagger or Y3 dagger, this corresponds to exciting, well, this one is the third root, and this is the second plus the third. So this sort of gives us four sort of magnons or four single excitations. There's another excitation, though, where we excite Y1 goes to Y4, and Y4 dagger goes to Y1 dagger at the same time. And this corresponds to exciting all three nodes at the same time. And here we have sort of, we've excited two momentum-carrying nodes, and so this is sort of like a composite, or it's not really, I don't know, bound magnon state. But the one of the things, of course, is that here, this is our vacuum, and I'll try and say a little bit in a minute, but of course this corresponds to the BMN-like string, and these are sort of the transverse excitations in the CP3 direction. I'm obviously getting a little bit ahead of myself, but here, where these corresponds to Hilbertian magnons, this one seems to correspond to sort of a double excitation. But from the string point of view, it seems just as elementary as these ones. It's heavier. It's in the spectrum, does match up, but its compositeness is certainly not apparent at all from
from the world sheet point of view. I'm going a bit slow. So our Minahan's Rembo conjectured what the full two-loop, so this here, obviously, I'm just in the scalar sector, but we can extend it to the, again, quotation marks, group. This is, obviously, this notation is what they used. The group is, again, OSP6/4, but they, whatever, to try and parallel the ADS5 case, they used a different notation. So you can, again, just by writing down what the Dinkin diagram is, you can extract what the beta equations should be for the full set. So here, this is, of course, the sort of fermionic node corresponding to, just read off from the Cartan matrix for this group. This set of beta equations, again, which I'm not going to write down, they're slightly longer, there's a set of five different equations, there's a question of how well it's been checked. So to date, I guess what's been done is that Minahan and, was it Shulgin? I guess this is not actually in chronological order, and Zarembo did do a Feynman diagram calculation for the SL2/1 sector, where in addition to having sort of scalar excitation, well, so set of excitations are Y1, Y4 plus, so these are the excitations on sort of the odd sites. On the even sites, I have Y4 dagger. This is the spins that I allow on odd sites, and the spins that I allow on even sites are the conjugate, the fermions, and you allow covariant derivatives. And so they calculated for this sector, and they showed that the Hamiltonian, again, was corresponded to an integrable spin chain. And then by noticing the structure of the tensor products of representations for this group and for the full group, sort of match one onto one, they lifted the Hamiltonian to the full theory, and so claim that then that shows that the full theory is indeed an integrable spin chain. There's also by Zwiebel, who just using the supersymmetry, the structure of the algebra, of the full superalgebra, showed that the two-loop Hamiltonian, that the sort of the full Hamiltonian has to be integrable, which just follows from sort of an algebraic analysis of the supersymmetry. The kind of odd thing about this is that this also works for ABJ. So this would seem to say that the ABJ theory is also integrable at two loops. And then the last thing, just to say, is that you can perform a duality on this Dinkin diagram. Of course, these diagrams for supergroups are not unique, so there's an equivalent form. Am I getting this right? Where as such, and in this case, you can sort of see the SU2 symmetries. Sort of there's sort of two copies of it, but this SU2 is going this way and going this way. And just using this, you can sort of repeat all of the arguments that were done for the the ADS5 times S5 case, or for the PSU2, 2/4 spin chain. And you can so show that the S matrix has the same matrix structure, and you can derive the all order dispersion relation. In particular, so you can show that it has to have the same square root form. It's 1/4 plus 4π² h of lambda sine square p over 2. And the sort of one slight difference is that here, Well, no, it's exactly the same as it was in the previous case, except the thing is that this H function has played sort of a more non-trivial role in this particular version of the ADS-CFT integrability story. At weak coupling, H of lambda just goes like lambda plus order lambda cubed corrections. But at strong coupling, in the dual theory, which I'll just describe now, it's actually seen to behave differently. So this function is sort of a non-trivial interpolating function between weak and strong. And this is sort of one of the reasons that this sort of integrable duality might be sort of interesting, and in that it really does seem to go ahead very, very similar. Because you have this SU2/2 symmetry, nearly all of the answers that you get really go through. And indeed, I mean, the actual all-order conjecture says that the dressing phase is the same. And so everything seems to go through. It's almost too similar. But because of the reduced symmetry, you have, you know, sort of 24 supersymmetries rather than the full 32, including the, from the string theory point of view, there's a little bit less. There seems to be maybe a little bit less protection for some of these, functions in the theory. And so in particular, this function is different at weak and strong coupling. And there may be other things. Okay. So to describe the other side of the duality, we have the string dual, which of course also was given to us by ABJM. So we have type 2A string theory on 4 squared. This is ADS 4. Unit radius DSCP 3 squared. So the radius is related to the Etoft coupling. The Etoft coupling in the same way. 2.5. Root n over k. This geometry, of course, follows from this compactification of the ADS4 times S7, sort of orbifolded in the appropriate way, but I won't really mention that just to save time, although it gives, in some sense, a large part of the motivation for studying these things, that you're actually looking at sort of a membrane theory. Here, though, because we are interested in the in the limit, basically, where we see only the string theory. Right. So, and in addition to this, of course, this Bakhtiarian geometry, there's also fluxes. So there's a two-form flux. This is the dilaton factor, which is also given by lambda bar 5/2 over pi to the 4th n. And this is proportional to the Kähler form on the of the CP3, so the CP3 Kähler form. And there's a 4 form. So this just comes from sort of in reducing from 11 dimensions, there's a spin connection term, or the curvature, which gives rise to a 2 form, and in the CP3. And the 4 form just comes from the 4 form that you had in the ADS4 times S7 membrane, near horizon membrane geometry. And this is the volume form on the ADS4 space. So this geometry has 24 supersymmetries, and can be written as coset manifold. Coset manifold, where the bosonic geometry is given by SO3,2 times SO6 times SO3,1 times U3. Right. Now, going forward, we want to do string theory in this background, and we need to find an appropriate string action. So one nice conjecture, which leads to sort of the one of the strongest motivations for the fact that the string theory in this background might be integrable, is to write down a coset sigma model with the appropriate Wessamino term. So we have the coset sigma model plus the appropriate Wessamino term, and this was done by Aretinov and Frolov. And you can indeed do this, which So just let me say a couple of words. So you can, so actually just go back for a second actually. One question that is interesting before I go on is the exactness of this geometry. Does this geometry take any corrections? In the ADS5 times S5 case, there's, strong evidence to proofs that the geometry is actually exact. And indeed, the same, I think, is true for the ADS4 times S7. But after doing this sort of orbifold compactification, it's not clear whether this geometry would be exact anymore. Of M theory. It's due to Kalosh and somebody else, and I can't remember it. I'm not going to be able to reproduce it for you now. I can give you a reference. Also, I'm not even sure how rigorous it actually is. Yeah. There would be higher derivative corrections. So that's exactly. So here you could imagine that there would be higher derivative correction. So I don't know is the answer whether this geometry is exact. I guess using similar things you can maybe make some sort of argument that you don't expect the actual form to take any corrections, but maybe just sort of the radius. But again, possible sources would include these r to the fourth terms. There was also recently a paper by Bergman and Hirano where they gave arguments that the sort of orbifold gives corrections to the charges, and that these result in, again, sort of corrections between basically corrections that would look like string theory two-loop corrections on the whirl sheet to this function. But I actually don't understand their arguments very well, and their arguments also seem to be sort of internally inconsistent in that they get different results depending on whether they do an M-theory lemma-dimensional calculation or do a string theory calculation, so I'm not really sure. But it certainly is very possible that those could be there. So to return here, the problem with this coset, oh not problem, but this coset sigma model, of course, only has 24 fermions. It's certainly not, is this equivalent to the Green-Schwarz string or to any other string, string theory in this background. And the claim is that, that it's partially kappa gauge fixed. Gauge fixed version. And then, in particular, that there is that sort of eight of the fermions have been removed, and that they did show that this coset sigma model has a fermionic symmetry, which you can use to remove eight further fermions, which would give you the appropriate content. The only thing is that the kappa symmetry, sort of the residual kappa symmetry, is only appropriate when you're looking at string solutions that move in both the non-compact and the compact space. If the string solution has no support in the compact space, the fermionic symmetry gets enlarged, and you can remove 12 of the fermions, and so then the counting doesn't work. So only consistent for solutions with support in CP3. This isn't such a problem, it seems, in the calculations that have been done so far. You can always sort of, look at solutions that do have some support in the CP3 and then take a limit, and it seems to be smooth. But who's to know? Going forward, I mean...
Yes.
Well, okay, so that's actually something I don't know the answer to. I would imagine that if the background does get corrections, I'd have to reinterpret the coupling in front of the string action. So as in, if the radius, say, gets corrections, then I would, what I have here should be interpreted as the proper,
like the whatever the proper radius is, and it's a fully corrected thing. Yeah, it would just be a finite renormalization, I think. It would just be a exactly. It would just be that this thing here, the relation between this thing would just be some finite shift. But the beta function would vanish. I mean, I think. I know it's okay. It's consistent, but. But yeah. I mean, no, there is. Okay. So I don't know the answer to this. And yeah, it would just. I think the claim would be it would just be some shift in this parameter. Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. Right. So, yes. Okay. So that's that. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Okay, you can also find the actual proper Green-Schwarz string by doing a double dimensional reduction. Of the membrane theory. In, as I said, ADS4 times S7, modded out by this ZK. But actually, for everything I want to say, we only need the quadratic part. Which is, well, which is you can just write down from sort of the form of the coupling, right? The just knowing what the background fields are. The Green-Schwarz string action is just I theta bar square root h ab minus epsilon ab m11 covariant derivative theta. Where this obviously, you know, has all the background fluxes in it, and there would be, of course, or the theta, well, fourth corrections. Okay, I guess I'm going to run very short in time, so I'm going to just try and skip ahead. Given this form of the action, and if we do take it to be consistent, it is just the sort of the standard coset model, and so you can write down the same sort of flat connection. That you could do for the sort of ADS5 times S5 case and construct a set of charges. So as I said, this is why this one is nice for proving integrability. So if we assume that this one is valid, we have classical integrability. We can construct a monodromy matrix, so I call the flat connection L sigma. We can construct a monodromy matrix, which is just the path ordered exponential along closed loop in the string of the flat connection. And from there, let's see. Yeah. Okay. And so then you have the usual algebraic curve construction. So for any given classical solution, we can find the eigenvalues or even the logs of the eigenvalues of the monodromy matrix, which are the quasi-momenta. We call them qi. These are quasi-momenta. And the algebraic curve for this problem, so in this case here, for the coset sigma model, again, I'm being very short. We have some, the action is given in terms of currents, and these are sort of 10 by 10 matrices. And I didn't say, but there is indeed a Z4 grading on this space. There isn't an outer automorphism, but there is an inner automorphism with Z4 inner automorphism, so you can do the same splitting that you can do in the ADS5 times S5 case. So here, there's sort of 10 eigenvalues. So there's a list of 10. And so you can construct the algebraic curve for this problem. I guess this was done by Gromov and Vieira. And how am I going to draw? I guess I will try very briefly. Because it's very important for the all-order conjecture. The fact that the algebraic curve comes out of the all-order conjecture is a very important point for its consistency. Two more. And then there's four. Okay, so this is Q1, Q2, Q3, Q4, Q5. And then the sheets are not independent, they're related to each other. So Q6 is minus Q5, Q7 is minus Q4, I guess, and so on. And you can identify these sheets with the different excitations that you found, that are given by this Dinkin diagram. For a given classical solution that is sort of specified by the analytic, by branch cuts and the analytic properties of this Riemann, this multi-sheeted Riemann surface. Or going the other way, given any Riemann surface which has certain sort of analytic properties, we can have a classical solution. And various different poles that connect various sheets correspond to particular excitations in the spin chain, and of course also from the string theory point of view. And those excitations can be listed by the excitations of the Dinkin diagram. These two sheets here correspond to sort of excitations in the ADS space, as do these last two, which are related by these, and the remaining ones correspond to excitations in the CP3. What? Yeah, I guess it's like a degenerate limit. Yes, apparently you can. It'll be some sort of degenerate limit of the curve. Which other case? Well, the full action, it's not clear that that is integrable. No one's shown that that has a flat connection if you include everything. So, no. Okay, so I'm just going to... I guess I did start a little late, so otherwise I'm going to get to say nothing. I probably should list them, but this curve has particular analytic properties, such as, you have cuts. So a given solution is listed by its cuts across different branches. So this is sort of the value of the quasi-momenta just above the cut on a given sheet I. This is the value below a given cut on sheet J. And then this is characterized by some integer where we're on some particular cut on the curve. They're also characterized, so this is sort of the, this in some sense gives rise to the positions, and these Nijs correspond to sort of moduli of the curve. They're also characterized by sort of the size or the filling fraction, which are sort of the integral around the cuts. So this is really only proportional to dx. There's this factor that arises everywhere in this thing.
So these are the filling fractions of these cuts. So here I'm integrating around some cut, and it sort of corresponds to the size. There's also, you have to specify the properties, the behavior of these quasi-momenta at the special point. So this curve is obviously, it's a curve in X, which I didn't write. X is the spectral parameter. And you have to specify the properties at positions of X equals to plus or minus 1, and sort of it also has an inversion symmetry, and then you also have to the behavior of the quasi-momenta as you go to X being at infinity gives you the sort of classical charges of the problem. There's also a very nice method for doing quasi-classical quantization, where you have a given solution, and then you can sort of look at what the fluctuations about that solution are by adding in extra poles to the solution and calculating sort of their back reaction on the curve and calculate what the correction to the energy is. And so given a solution, you can actually sort of systematically find the one loop correction to the sort of the strong coupling one loop correction to that solution, which is very nice and is again very important. When I get to it, I'll try and say. Well, I mean, again, that this was done by Gromov and Vieira for the ADS5 times S5 case, but the same thing just goes almost automatically through here. Okay, so I really should say what this all loop conjecture for the problem is, and again, I'm going to do it without actually writing it down, which is a bit of a shame, but it's just, as I said, the problem, the equations are very long. Okay, so we have a set of asymptotic beta equations. So, of course, here, when I say the all-order conjecture, we're talking about the asymptotic thing, just like we were for the ADS5 times S5, although I guess this finite size corrections that they have using this finite size also works for this case, or at least it's analogous and parallel. So, okay, so valid for all values of the Etoffs coupling. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to write down the Dynkin diagram and say how it modifies. Well, so again, without actually writing down the beta equations, which, as I said, is a bit bad, but what can you do? So this is the sort of dualized version of the Dynkin diagram for the OSP6/4, where I have two fermionic nodes. I sort of rotated it through 90 degrees for some reason. Well, because I copied it from the paper, and I guess they did. Right. And so this then gives you the sort of the set of the beta equations, and you can they have a canonical form, and you can make the sort of standard conjecture for adding in the so you have the weak coupling form, which is given by this Dynkin diagram, or these beta equations up here, but I also haven't written down. But the key thing is then how you actually to modify them to become valid for all lambda, you have to add in this dressing phase, this non-trivial dressing phase. And so their conjecture for how you modify these, where you put the dressing phase and what the dressing phase is basically you add a dressing phase to the beta equation So these are the momentum-carrying roots, so you add a dressing phase to the equation for U4, which depends on the U4 roots. You also add one into the equation for the U4 bar that also depends just on the U4 bar roots, and then you add one that basically depends on the U4 and the U4 bar roots and enters into both equations. And then the other thing is that you just use the Weissert-Eden-Staudacker dressing phase, the same dressing phase as you had in ADS5, in all these places. So just to say in words, the sort of the dressing phase for the Chern-Simons is really just the n equals 4 dressing phase, so this is the Weissert-Eden-Staudacker, where you replace the coupling, square at lambda, by this function h of lambda. Everything else, so the usual parameters that you want to write these answers in, x plus or minus 1 over 1 x plus or minus, which is equal to 1 over h lambda, u plus or minus I over 2. And then in terms of these parameters, I can write down what the charges are. And the charges take exactly the same form as they took in the ADS5 case, but I have sort of
different copies of them. So here I sum over the ones that correspond to this node. This is K4, and the ones that correspond to K4 bar. And the expressions for these densities in terms of these parameters is, again, just the same as it is in the ADS5 case. Oh, I really shouldn't. Okay. And similarly, and so the sort of Q2 is just the energy. Okay, so I should just say a couple things about the sort of at least some of the evidence for this is that, well, first of all, it has the right symmetries, so that's actually pretty powerful. It agrees with the weak coupling beta ansatz, which is now being checked. So the two loop beta ansatz, it reduces in the appropriate way. It gives in the scaling limit, so if I take the roots, if I take a large number of roots, if I take them to be very large, if I take the coupling to be large, if I take the length to be large, so in this appropriate scaling limit, this all-order conjecture does lead to this algebraic curve, so it has the right strong coupling behavior, so it at least it captures the classical behavior of this coset sigma model. Moreover, as I said, with this with this algebraic curve, you can sort of do a one-loop calculation and derive, in some sense, what the correction to the dressing phase, the one-loop correction to the dressing phase should be, sort of the analogous part of the Hernandez-Lopez, and this conjecture does reproduce that piece. And there have been a number of other things, like people have calculated finite size corrections, and then using Luscher's method, they have shown that this conjecture does reproduce those... it reproduces the right terms. Right. So I should just say a couple things, though. So that's all very good and is very strong. In another way, it's based on very little evidence. For example, a lot of the stuff that was done for the string theory in ADS5 times S5 has not been done in this case. For example, in the ADS5 times S5 case, it's a very useful thing. Using the light cone gauge, people were able to like take the symmetries, do the light cone symmetry algebra, and from this they could show sort of the origin of these central extensions, sort of assuming integrability and the appropriate symmetries in the light cone gauge. Like Aratunov, Frolov, and Zamaklar were able to sort of derive this S matrix and show crossing and all of these many things. The fact that these things occur in this theory has not been done. And the world sheet theory might have some subtleties that are not clear. I'm not going to have time to talk about that because I'm just going to not. But, for example, this issue, as I said, that here what look like sort of double excitations in the spin chain, which are captured by this all-order conjecture, look like elementary excitations in the string theory, and it would be nice maybe to clarify those things. Okay, so then there's one other set of problems, and that's just what I want to take the last 5 minutes to do, and that's where actual explicit calculations from the world sheet theory don't match up so nicely with the predictions from the all-order conjecture, or indeed from the algebraic curve. Yes. Okay. So the first thing is just to say is that this H function, when lambda is much much larger than one, has an expansion which starts like square root lambda over 2. This can be calculated just from the PP wave limit plus A1. Plus A2 over square root lambda, and so on. And the calculation of this is, well, so doing algebraic curve, it was shown that A1 is just equal to 0 by calculating sort of the dispersion relation at one loop with a giant magnon. This was by Sheridanovich, including his pronouncing. Okay, but as I said then, at lambda much, much less than 1, it starts off at lambda. So there's some sort of non-trivial interpolation. And exactly what this A1 is, you can calculate, as I said, from doing a one-loop giant magnon calculation. You can also then look at sort of spinning string solutions.
Going to talk right. Okay. Yeah. So, for example, there's sort of the GKP string, which lives in sort of inside of an ADS3, ADS3 times S1, where this is sort of a subset of course, the ADS4, and this is a U1 that lies inside the CP3. So, this string, in some sense, is exactly the same. Classically, its strong coupling is exactly the same as the string that you had in the ADS5 times S5 version. Its energy gives you the cusp anomalous dimension. Which is sort of an interesting physical observable in these theories. And actually, a lot of the things go through, a lot of the things that were true sort of for the ADS5 case also go through here. For example, this string can be related to the cusp Wilson loop by analytic continuation. And by sort of the world sheet duality that Nicholas talked about on Tuesday, it's related to scattering amplitudes, to strong coupling scattering, sort of a la Alde-Maldacena. Of course, the rest of this, whether this fermionic T-duality or any of this, is valid in this case, is by no means clear. But given that the solution is exactly the same, you can sort of do the same bosonic the T-duality and you get the same answer. So at least there's some possibility that these things are related. This is sort of like a trivial observation in some sense. But this thing here, where the cusp anomalous dimension is related to the Wilson loop, is well, that's as rigorous as it is in the other case. Okay, so you can calculate what the one-loop correction to the anomalous dimension is, and it doesn't match the prediction from the all-order conjecture with this value of A1. You can also do the circular string, circular spinning string, and I won't even write down what the solution is. Again, I'll just say what the result is. In this case, the one-loop correction breaks into sort of two pieces. There's an even piece. So by even, okay, this is in powers. Okay, so the solution has charges S. So this is the spin in the ADS3 direction, and it has angular momentum J in the S1 direction. When we look at a limit where S over J is kept fixed as S and J go to infinity. Okay, so now I can write down the one loop correction to the energy. And it, as I said, it breaks into an even piece. And by even, I mean it goes like even powers in J. And there's an odd piece, which is odd powers in J. This piece here, the even piece, corresponds to an anomaly contribution from the beta equations. And this piece here comes from the dressing phase. What would be the Hernandez-Lopez piece of the dressing phase in ADS5 times S5, which is meant to be the same here. And again, these things don't match when you just sort of naively do the world sheet calculation with the prediction from the all-order with the algebraic curve, and with this particular value, and the resolution is that the world sheet calculation that we did seems to be predicting a different value of this H function. In particular, from the world sheet calculation, you're getting a value for A1, which is I think log 2 over pi. My notes have some funny normalizations just to speed up. Winging it. Okay, so this is the world sheet calculation using the Green-Schwarz action and the quadratic piece of the fermions that I listed before. With this, you get agreement for the GKP string and for the odd piece of the circular string. Odd circular. And the reason why you're getting a different value for H is that on using the algebraic curve calculation and using the world sheet calculation, using sort of a different regularization, the answers, of course, are finite, but you have, you're summing over like a sum of frequencies. So you can, and each, like the sum over any given frequency, of course, is divergent. It's only when you combine all the frequencies of the fluctuations together and then sum them that you get a finite answer. And so there can be sort of inequivalent ways of performing this sum, and it gives you finite differences in this H function. And it's to be pointed out that this H function is actually, in some sense, not actually even a physical quantity. Well, for one thing, the beta ansatz does not know about this H function. The H function enters in the all-order conjecture as H. It could be anything. Really, what you should do is that you should calculate one particular energy, use this as your reference energy, and express all other energies in terms of that energy. And that would remove this H function and would give you sort of a proper physical measurement. Okay, so there's a lot more to that, but I want to finish. There is, however, still one more disagreement. And that's for this E even piece. So the world sheet calculation and the algebraic curve calculation, and indeed, the all-order conjecture, because here this is not something that can be fixed by modifying this H function, they disagree. Now I should, and so that needs to be resolved or interpreted. So just let me say a couple of words. Well, one, if you use the algebraic curve prescription, which I should say, from the point of view of the world sheet, is very unnatural. Essentially, it looks like imposing different cutoffs for different flavors of fluctuations. From the algebraic curve, of course, it looks very natural, while the world sheet prescription looks very unnatural. But if you use the algebraic curve prescription, you do get agreement, right? So this algebraic curve prescription is consistent with the all-order conjecture, with the beta equations. The world sheet prescription is inconsistent with beta equations. Modulo, there is some issue that it's possible that we had, that in the calculation that we did, that we're using the wrong boundary conditions for the fermions. We assumed periodic boundary conditions for our fermions, and with that we find that the result is inconsistent. If the fermions had anti-periodic boundary conditions, then the claim is that it would be consistent, although at the moment I find it hard to believe that we actually do have the wrong boundary conditions, but that gets into the details. However, even if that's true, even if there is this issue that the boundary conditions are wrong, which, as I said, I doubt, it seems to be the case that doing the world sheet calculation, using sort of the standard regulator on the world sheet, just sort of the normal thing where you would impose a cutoff on your loop integrals and then take the cutoff to infinity, is inconsistent with integrability, or is inconsistent with the all-order beta equations. And indeed, the modification you would need to make is quite substantial, as in it's not just a modification of the dressing phase, which would arise from here, but rather seems to be a modification of the structure of the beta equations. So that seems to be, at the moment, very unclear. Okay, so I will finish there. Sorry for running over the time. No, so you could imagine, say, a shift in the coupling, say, changing this H function where the coupling enters, and shifting that will not fix this problem.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Fair enough. That's true. I would say that, well, first of all, I mean, this same calculation done in the ADS-5 case didn't show this subtlety, as in they just agreed. Oh, I see. Oh, okay, sorry. I see. Okay. Fair enough then. I don't know what the resolution of this is. There is two issues here, but I think regardless of the boundary conditions for the fermion, this is still true, right? The world sheet is not consistent with the Bethe equation. Right, but they... Exactly, yeah. So that seems like it's not consistent. And I have to say, okay, so, I mean, those seem... The question of boundary conditions also is a question about where you take as your starting point. As I said, for this calculation here, we take the sort of green Schwartz string as our starting point. Whereas the starting point for the algebraic curve is this coset. And it's also not clear to me exactly what you actually have to put in by hand what the boundary conditions and the fermions and the group element is. You could equally choose them to be antiperiodic there too. And it's... this is getting very detailed, but I mean, the bosonic piece is already antiperiodic in that choice for the group element. So it seems it could be very possible to choose the fermionic piece to also be antiperiodic. Indeed, that would seem almost more consistent where bosonic and the fermionic pieces would be equivalent. I should say, given, I've erased it now, with the green Schwartz action as it's written, you can take the flat space limit and you just get the standard flat space green Schwartz action. And there the fermions are periodic without making any sort of field redefinition. And that seems to be, well, okay, I guess it's not a trivial limit, but it seems to be a smooth limit. And so it seems hard to believe that if you take the quadratic action that we used, and if you imposed antiperiodic boundary conditions and took this limit, whereas with the coset model, you've already done some sort of strange kappa gauge fixing. It's not clear that the flat space limit of that is appropriate. But I will say this in that, to put sort of another spin on it, in that the all-order conjecture has this all-order conjecture has the appropriate weak coupling limit. There is a sigma model at strong coupling that agrees with the algebraic curve. It's this coset model. Now, it's not the same as the green Schwartz string, but then there's just a question of, well, which one is the appropriate dual to the Chern-Simons theory? And if this order conjecture is a smooth interpolating between... there's a lot of gap then at the strong coupling part. I guess another thing might be is that, there is a pure spinner formulation for this problem. Calculating some of these things in the, in that formulation is maybe not so straightforward, but maybe it gives a sort of a more if you know you've got a properly consistent theory and so on like that, and maybe it's useful. Well, as I said, we only needed the quadratic piece, and the quadratic piece has a sort of, in any background you can write it down. So. Yeah, well, there's the OSP2/2M, I don't know. Indeed. There should be some other theory there that seems to have N equals 6. I don't know. I mean, for the ABJ theory, that's, I guess you have then like a B field. No, his argument is only for weak coupling two loop. I mean, it doesn't necessarily extend further than that. Yeah. Even if you just put in the non-trivial B field on the world sheet, I don't see you don't even have classical integrability anymore, right? I mean, it's non-trivial. Okay. I see. Okay. But again, that's a two loop. Yes, this is the thing. A two loop, it could just be some sort of accidental kind of. So the instanton effects will not go like that. I don't know.